A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
That moment when a distant relative has fetched their coat for the third time, put it down again, and is now standing in the doorway describing a plumbing problem they had in 1998. The goodbye is the only social ritual with a stated goal. Ending the interaction is directly opposed by the obligation to perform it properly. Daniel wants to know how to engineer exactly that scenario. He's asking how to create goodbyes that stretch for hours, laying traps that exploit people's concepts of privacy and good manners to build what he calls an infinite goodbye space. Specifically, what mechanisms turn a 30-second farewell into a 3-hour time bubble? How do you plant hooks during the main event that only trigger during the goodbye? And what does this reveal about the fragility of politeness as a cooperative game?
So we're not talking about the accidental long goodbye. The ant who genuinely forgot to mention the plumbing. We're talking about engineering the goodbye as a deliberate art form.
Right. Daniel's asking for techniques. A playbook. And the framing is important here. This isn't about annoying people. It's about understanding the structure of politeness well enough to bend it without breaking it.
The infinite goodbye space. I love this term. It's a temporal bubble where the act of leaving becomes the main event, sustained entirely by the participant's mutual unwillingness to violate social norms by being the one to actually walk away. The paradox at the center of it, the goodbye, is the only ritual where success, actually ending the interaction, requires violating the very norms that sustain it.
You can't leave without being rude, but you also can't stay without being trapped.
And this is where Brown and Levinson's politeness theory from 1987 gives us the framework. They identified two kinds of face, the social self we present. Negative face is your desire for autonomy, to not be imposed upon. Positive face is your desire to be approved of, to be liked. The infinite goodbye weaponizes the threat to negative face. You can't say please leave without damaging the other person's positive face. You're essentially telling them their company is no longer desired.
So the host is in a bind. They can either endure the extended goodbye or be the one who breaks the politeness game entirely. And most people will endure for an astonishingly long time before they'll do that.
The core question underneath all of this, if politeness is a cooperative game theorists call it an assurance game, what happens when one player defects by refusing to leave? The other player can't defect by asking them to leave without breaking the game entirely. That asymmetry is the engine. The defector has all the power.
And Daniel's question is, how do you exploit that power with precision?
Let's get into the specific mechanisms, the traps you can lay.
Mechanism 1, the doorway effect, inverted. There's actual research on this. University of Notre Dame, 2011. Walking through a doorway creates what psychologists call an event boundary in memory. Your brain essentially files away the previous room's context and opens a new one. It's why you walk into the kitchen and forget why you went there.
Right, the doorway triggers a cognitive reset, but the infinite goodbye exploits the opposite phenomenon. By never crossing the threshold, you keep the interaction in a liminal state where new conversational threads still feel permissible. You remain physically inside the room while making departure gestures.
So you stand up. You say, well, we should probably. And then you don't move toward the door. You move toward a photograph on the mantelpiece.
That's the trap. The host's brain has already begun the cognitive process of ending the interaction. They've started the goodbye script, but you've refused to trigger the event boundary. You're still in the room. The conversation is still, technically, in the main event. And because the threshold hasn't been crossed, new topics don't feel like they're being introduced during a goodbye. They feel like they're being introduced during the visit.
Which brings us to mechanism 2, the one more thing cascade. You plant conversational hooks during the main lunch that only become visible during the goodbye.
This is where the artistry comes in. During lunch, you make a comment that's just specific enough to be memorable but vague enough to require elaboration. Something like, your grandmother's pie, remind me, was that the one with the lattice crust or the crumbled top? But you don't let them answer. You wave it off. We'll come back to it. And then you move on.
And they forget about it. Until the goodbye.
Until the goodbye. When you're standing near the door, coat half on, and you say, oh, the pie. You never told me. Lattice or crumble? And now they're forced into a collaborative memory exercise. They have to reconstruct their grandmother's baking history. They might pull out photos. They might call a sibling to verify. You've triggered a retrieval task that can stretch indefinitely, and they can't refuse because you're showing interest in their family history.
The key is specificity. Was it the one with the lattice crust? Is better than tell me more about the pie. The specificity forces them to engage with the detail, which opens more details. It's a fractal.
And you concede several of these during the main event. A half-finished story about a shared memory. A question about a piece of furniture you noticed. A reference to something they mentioned 3 visits ago that you just remembered. Each one is a delayed trigger. The goodbye activates them in sequence.
Mechanism 3. Physical positioning. This is the choreography.
Never be the first to reach for a coat. Position yourself near a chair, not the door. If you're near the door, you've committed to leaving. If you're near a chair, you're still in the visiting posture.
And the handshake pivot.
The handshake pivot is beautiful. You extend your hand for the farewell handshake, which signals the goodbye is concluding. But as you shake, you turn your body back toward the room. You've created a physical contradiction. Your hand says, I'm leaving, but your body says, I'm staying. The other person has to either release the handshake prematurely, which is a face threat, it's rude, or follow your body language back into the room.
And once they've turned back toward the room, they've re-entered the space. The goodbye resets.
The handshake itself becomes a trap. Once initiated, breaking it before its natural conclusion is a violation, and the natural conclusion can be extended. You keep talking while shaking. You use your other hand to gesture at something. The handshake becomes an anchor that holds them in place.
I've seen this done. The handshake that lasts 45 seconds while someone describes a bookshelf.
Mechanism 4. The gift of time. The obligation reciprocity loop.
This is the one that feels kindest and is therefore the most dangerous.
During the goodbye, you offer something small. A photo you promised to send, a recipe card, a book recommendation. The gift must be genuine enough that refusing it'd be rude, but trivial enough that accepting it doesn't end the interaction. Because now they have to reciprocate.
They have to offer you something in return. Their attention, at minimum. Oh, let me write that down. Wait, let me find the photo now. Actually, I have the book right here.
And the reciprocity loop begins. You've given them something, your attention, your interest in their grandmother's pie, and now they owe you. The obligation to reciprocate is one of the deepest social instincts we have. It operates below conscious awareness. They're not thinking, I'm now trapped in an obligation loop. They're thinking, this person has been so kind, I should show them the photo album.
And the photo album is on the other side of the house, and it's heavy, and there are 4 of them.
Let me add a case study here because this reveals something important about cultural contingency. The Irish goodbye. Slipping out without saying anything is famous as a way to avoid exactly this trap. But the inverse exists. What you might call the Scottish stay. In cultures with strong hospitality norms, the host is expected to protest any departure for at least 20 minutes. You can't leave yet. Have another cup of tea. The goodbye is ritualized as an extended negotiation.
In those contexts, the infinite goodbye isn't engineered. It's expected. The norms themselves demand it.
Ethnographic work on farewell rituals in what researchers call high-contact cultures shows this clearly. In some Mediterranean and Middle Eastern contexts, a goodbye under 30 minutes is considered abrupt, almost insulting. The ritual requires multiple rounds of departure signaling, protest, reseating, more food, more conversation, and only then the actual leave-taking.
Which means the infinite goodbye is only a trap in cultures where the norm is efficiency. In a culture where the goodbye is supposed to take an hour, stretching it to 3 hours is just enthusiasm.
Right. The vulnerability exists specifically in low-contact, efficiency-oriented cultures, what we might call the Anglo-American politeness model, where the stated preference is for clean exits, but the norms still prevent you from enforcing one.
So the engineer is exploiting a gap between the cultural ideal, the quick, clean goodbye, and the social reality, the obligation to perform warmth.
Those are the mechanics, but what do they actually reveal about us?
Let's go deeper. The knock-on effect.
The privacy trap. This is where the infinite goodbye becomes revealing about how politeness functions. The host can't assert their own negative face. Their desire for autonomy, for the interaction to end, without violating the engineer's positive face. Please leave is face threatening. It says your company is an imposition.
And the engineer's job is to remove every escape hatch that would let the host exit without saying those words.
You preempt every potential exit line. The host says I should let you go. And that phrasing is revealing, by the way. I should let you go frames the departure as the host's decision, not the guest's desire. It's a polite fiction that the guest wants to stay, but the host is releasing them. The engineer exploits that fiction.
Oh, no rush. I'm enjoying this. And now the host's exit line has been neutralized. They can't say I should let you go again without it sounding like they're insisting, which is even ruder.
The host says, well, I don't want to keep you. The engineer says, you're not keeping me at all. This is lovely. The host says, it's getting late. The engineer says, is it? I completely lost track of time. Each exit line is met with a counter that reframes the departure as unnecessary. The host runs out of socially acceptable scripts.
And this is the double bind. The host can either endure the extended goodbye, or be the one who breaks the politeness game. And breaking the game, saying, I need you to leave now, carries a social cost that most people will do almost anything to avoid.
The witness effect makes this exponentially more powerful. When other family members are present, the goodbye becomes a public performance. You must say goodbye to each person individually. Each goodbye can trigger new conversational threads. Each person represents a new obligation loop.
And the engineer can sequence them. Goodbye to the spouse first. Oh, before I forget, you mentioned your garden. That triggers a 5-minute conversation. Then goodbye to the teenager. How's the college search going? That triggers a 10-minute conversation. Then back to the original host. Your spouse was just telling me about the garden. Is that the one with the...
Each interaction generates hooks for the next. It's a chain reaction. And because there are witnesses, the host can't even signal desperation. They can't roll their eyes or make a cutting motion at their throat. Every gesture is visible. The performance must be maintained.
The time distortion phenomenon is the third effect, and this one is strange. The brain processes time differently during ritualized social interactions. There's something called the holiday paradox. Familiar routines compress time perception, which is why the drive home feels shorter than the drive there. But novel, high-stakes social rituals expand perceived time.
A 10-minute goodbye can feel like an hour to all participants. The brain is in a heightened state of social monitoring. Am I being rude? Are they being rude? Is this ending? And that vigilance stretches subjective duration.
Which creates a feedback loop. As the goodbye stretches, participants become more invested in seeing it through. They've already invested 20 minutes in this farewell. If they break now, those 20 minutes were wasted discomfort. If they see it through to a natural conclusion, at least the discomfort had a purpose.
The sunk cost fallacy applied to social time.
And the longer it goes, the harder it's to break, because the break becomes more conspicuous. A quick exit after 5 minutes is normal. An abrupt exit after 45 minutes raises questions. What happened? Did something go wrong? The host now has to explain the exit, which is another social cost.
So the trap tightens over time. The longer you stay, the harder it's to leave, which means you stay longer, which means it gets even harder. It's a ratchet.
What this reveals about the fragility of social norms is, it's a little unsettling. The infinite goodbye works because politeness is a cooperative game, and the game has no mechanism for handling a player who defects in this particular way.
In game theory, an assurance game is one where both players prefer mutual cooperation over mutual defection, but each player will only cooperate if they're confident the other will too. The infinite goodbye exploits the fact that defection is asymmetric. The guest can defect by refusing to leave, and the host can't defect by demanding they leave without incurring a much higher social cost.
The defection costs aren't equal. That's the vulnerability.
Right. The guest's defection, overstaying, can be framed as enthusiasm, warmth, interest. It's face-enhancing in a way. I just enjoy your company so much. The host's defection, asking them to leave, can only be framed as rejection. There's no face-enhancing way to say, get out.
Which brings us to the ethical boundary. When does this stop being playful social experimentation and start being something else?
I think the line is whether the engineer is willing to be trapped in their own creation. If you wouldn't enjoy a 3-hour goodbye yourself, you're not experimenting with the structure of politeness. You're exploiting people's social anxiety.
That's the test. The infinite goodbye is a prank on the norms themselves, not on the individuals. But the individuals still experience the discomfort. The key distinction, the engineer should be engaged. The techniques work best when the engineer actually wants to be there, actually is interested in the grandmother's pie, actually does lose track of time.
The most effective infinite goodbye engineers are often the ones who don't want to leave. The technique works best when it's not a technique at all, but a genuine reluctance to end the interaction. The artifice is in the structure, not the emotion.
If you're bored and watching the clock, you're not an engineer. You're just a bad guest.
And the other ethical boundary, you can't trap someone who has explicitly signaled distress. If the host says, I have an early morning, or I'm not feeling well, those aren't exit lines to be neutralized. Those are genuine boundaries. The engineer respects those or stops being an engineer and starts being a problem.
The playbook has limits. But within those limits, when everyone is enjoying themselves, when the host is participating willingly in the extended farewell, when the traps are playful rather than coercive, the infinite goodbye is a kind of social art. A demonstration that the norms we think are rigid are actually...
That the boundary between a visit and a goodbye isn't a line. It's a space you can inhabit.
I worked for a man who did this professionally.
Professionally?
He didn't call it that. He was a tech billionaire, reclusive, had a pathological fear of being alone. He'd engineer goodbyes that lasted hours because when the guests left, the house was empty again. My job was to manage the escape hatches.
Manage them how?
Coded signals. If I placed the teacup on the left side of the saucer, it meant you have 15 minutes to extract yourself. If I used the phrase, shall I fetch the car, it meant extract yourself now. The guests never knew. They thought they were just having a long goodbye.
Did it work?
Most of the time. His favorite trap was the memory lane. During the goodbye, he'd suddenly remember a specific moment from earlier in the day, something that didn't happen, and ask the guest to help him remember the details. Was it before lunch or after lunch that we talked about the server architecture? I can't quite place it.
He was forcing them into a collaborative memory exercise.
Correcting a host's memory is a major face threat. You're telling them their recollection is wrong. So the guest would try to gently reconstruct the fictional event rather than say, that conversation never happened. It could go on for 40 minutes.
That's mechanism two with a twist. The hook doesn't even have to be real.
The best infinite goodbye I ever witnessed lasted 4 hours. The guest was a venture capitalist who prided himself on efficiency. He kept checking his watch, but couldn't find a way out. He never came back. The billionaire considered that a win.
Considered it a win because he'd successfully filtered out someone who wouldn't play the game?
Considered it a win because he wasn't alone for 4 more hours. I still have the teacup. It's in a box somewhere.
The teacup that meant 15 minutes.
Left side of the saucer. Never failed.
The coded signal is actually a fascinating addition to the framework. It means the infinite goodbye can be managed from outside. A third party who's not trapped in the politeness game can provide the exit that the host can't generate themselves.
Which is what a good butler does, I suppose. Provides the escape hatch so the host doesn't have to be rude.
That was the job. I was the rudeness proxy.
The memory lane technique, the fabricated memory, that's a darker version of the one more thing cascade. It doesn't just exploit the guest's politeness. It exploits their deference to the host's reality.
He was very good at it. He'd been alone a long time.
The question that leaves me with, if the infinite goodbye is a demonstration of how fragile politeness norms actually are, what does it say about us that these norms are so easily exploited? Are we trapped by our own good manners?
Brown and Levinson would say yes, that's exactly what their framework predicts. Face-saving behavior is so deeply ingrained that we'll endure significant discomfort rather than threaten someone's face. But the infinite goodbye also reveals that the trap is mutual. The engineer is as trapped as the host. They can't leave either, not without breaking the spell they've created.
As remote interactions become more common, I wonder if the digital goodbye becomes the new arena for this. The loitering on Zoom calls, the one more thing, in Slack threads. The mechanisms will change. No doorways to exploit, no handshakes to pivot, but the underlying tension between politeness and autonomy is the same.
The digital infinite goodbye might actually be harder to escape. There's no physical threshold to cross. You can't walk someone to the door in a Zoom call. The leave meeting button is the only exit, and clicking it while someone is still talking is the digital equivalent of hanging up mid-sentence.
The next time you find yourself stuck in a goodbye that won't end, ask yourself, are you trapped by politeness, or are you being engineered? And if you're the one engineering it, ask yourself, are you willing to stay?
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flemingtop for the teacup protocol, apparently.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. Or visit us at myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.